This show contains language and themes that may be considered offensive to some. Please use your best judgment about whether or not you should be listening. Sci-fi noise. I have a guest host today. So here is Mr. Rick Hansen with his year in review 2012.
Hello, true believers. This is not Derek Coward, obviously. I'm Rick Hansen. Sometimes in the past, I have hosted a little segment on the Marvel Noise program, some of you might be familiar with, called Smash Tales, and I could certainly go into detail about that, but the reason I'm here today is to give you some sci-fi goodness. It's been a little while for any listeners of this show since you've seen a guest host, so I begged, nay, pleaded with Derek to allow me this opportunity to go over the 2012 year in review. Since sci-fi seems to be all about cliches these days, I decided to use a big old cliche in my theme for this show, and that is for 2012, I'd like to review the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm going to review some TV shows, some of the movies of 2012, and even some comics. And of course, I'm going to have my own slant on science fiction, the genre, and my own favorites and dislikes too, which often conflict with Derek, which made me, you know, very surprised that he allowed me to have a voice here today. Anyway, he'll have plenty of time, as will you all, to tell me how insane I am and criticize me for what shows I'm and movies I'm leaving off these lists. But I don't want to turn this into Moby Dick, so let us get right to it. The first thing that I want to go into on my good list for 2012 happens to be comic books. And anybody who knows me knows that this is should be no surprise that comics top my list of as long as they're of good quality. Now, there's a lot of comics that include science fiction elements in them. As you know, let's face it, every superhero is in fact a mixture of science and fiction. But in terms of the the things that have the closest similarity to the science fiction genre, there were a few standouts over the last year. Now, back in the 90s, yours truly was a huge fan of the Image series of books that happened to feature the Jim Lee and the Rob Liefeld and so on, those gentlemen, including Youngblood and Prophet. And in 2012, actually 2011, I think, somewhere along then, Prophet was going to make a comeback. And of course, as soon as I saw this in the previews catalog, I had to order it right away because I was a huge fan of Prophet, even though I had my doubts as to whether it could recapture any of the old feeling that was done back when Stephen Platt was illustrating the book. But I wanted to give it a show anyway, just because give it a try anyway, just because I was a big fan of it and wanted to give my support. Plus, I had been dropping a lot of books, a lot of titles from my pull list of late, and I needed some things to fill it up. Anyway, when I got Prophet, it really knocked me for a loop. It was not at all the book that I left off with back in the 90s, but in fact, it had taken on a very strong science fiction element. The lead character, John Prophet, had been thrust centuries into the future. He was now not just one of many superheroes, but he was one of many clones of the original John Prophet. And as we came to know the universe around us, it was completely alien in every way that you can name. You know, there were no human cities. There was no human civilization. You know, there were numerous worlds with countless alien races, and each one had their own distinct culture and values, and the lead character heads to find his way through this and to recapture his original mission. But there's many twists and turns in it, and it, you know, the artwork is a very good good match for the bizarre nature of it. Now, a younger me would have just tossed this right off the bat because it was not even in the same ballpark theme-wise and content-wise as the original Prophet. You know, but after I read through the first few issues, I am enjoying this even better, which is saying a lot, because I could not tell you how much I enjoyed Stephen Platt's artwork back in the 90s. And I don't know what happened to him, but the story in this case surpasses any artwork that's ever come into a comic book in my experience. Second book I wanted to include was Saga. This is Brian K. Vaughan's latest little brainchild, and you know, you are probably going to be familiar with it with his earlier work, Ex Machina and Why the Last Man, all science fiction, you know, epics, just, you know, wonderful books. And so there was a lot riding on his next venture, because his name attracts a certain amount of prestige in this genre and in comics in general. You know, and everybody always wants to see it when somebody makes a title that is as beloved as Ex Machina and Why the Last Man. Are they going to be able to meet that standard and or even top it with their next thing? So many creators, they make something that the world just falls in love with, but then their next thing falls short. But Saga is something that is definitely different than the other ones, but it is still of the same quality. I would say that the story is moving at a relatively decent pace, particularly when compared with the trade paperback, you know, 6-issue story arc formula that modern comics have gone into. And the story centers around and it's a mixture of science fiction as well as fantasy elements. You've got these warring cultures, one which is somewhat fairy-like. You know, they have wings on their backs and they're very advanced technologically. And then you've got these others that are sort of like tieflings. If you are familiar with the Dungeons and Dragons world, you would know what that is. Horned beings. And they have a strong connection with the arcane, magic and such. So, they're these warring factions, and you've got two members of these two different factions that fall in love, have a child, and that's where the story starts off. You know, the child comes, the governments are coming after them. There's bounty hunters coming after them. And it's a lot of relationship-based drama, at just like the other things by Brian K. Vaughan have been in the past. Many strong science fiction themes are covered in this book, but the most important element is that it contains what I find is the best approach to almost all science fiction, and that is that it focuses on the people that are involved in the story. You not only get to know and develop opinions and attachments to the lead characters, but also their extended family and even the bounty hunters that come along. And just like in Brian K. Vaughan's earlier works, nobody is safe from danger in these. There are people who you may grow attached to, and they end up getting killed off. So it is not unlike the Walking Dead, another, you know, very popular book that is in the, you know, a similar style story wise to this. Anyway, moving on. One of the books that I found to be extremely interesting and beautiful this year was actually usually wouldn't fall into the science fiction category just because people have such a rigid opinion about this particular subject, and that is the Transformers universe. And now, obviously, robots that change into vehicles and have personalities in a world and then come to Earth and all that, that's obviously science fiction. But it's become such a cultural touch point for everybody that Transformers, nobody thinks about that in terms of science fiction anymore. It's in its own category almost. So normally I wouldn't touch on it in a podcast like this, but one of their trade paperbacks that came out this year, Autocracy, that's Autocracy, that was a phenomenal book. It basically takes place in the past of the Transformers universe, and every frame of every page is painted beautifully. It has a very dark tone to it. It's very moody, and you see a lot of darkness in the characters, both good and bad. And you basically get to see a lot of the backstory of what happened on the planet Cybertron, during the war itself, which adds much depth and flavor to the history of Transformers that has honestly been covered before when the franchise was owned and represented in the comics by Dreamwave. And there was nothing wrong with those stories, but this one stands alone and by itself without dismissive of the other stories that have been told by the other franchise owners at different times. So I would definitely recommend Transformers Autocracy if you wanted to pick up a trade. It's one of those ones that you read from cover to cover without putting it down in one sitting. Last area of comics that I wanted to cover in science fiction is another franchise that people have their strong opinions about, and that would be of the Voltron universe. This comes from the publisher Dynamite. And while the mainstream book just called Voltron is out there and has its strengths and weaknesses, one book came out this year called Voltron Year One. It was a 6-issue miniseries that was basically made to show you the backstory of the team that would eventually go on to pilot the Voltron Lions. You don't get to see the Voltron Lions or the big robot at all in this series, except for at the very end, the last page. So, if that spoils it for you, I am very sorry. What this does have going for it is brilliant pacing and storytelling that brings me back to my first time reading a spy book by the name of Queen and Country by Greg Rucka. Now, you wouldn't necessarily associate Voltron with a spy story or espionage work, unless you're just completely loopy. But this story basically talks about a team of spacefaring government agents that go on missions, and it's all very covert, and it's basically, it's espionage spy stories. It's like James Bond in space, except there's five of them, and they're a team that that have to work together like seamless, a seamless engine that has to be firing on all cylinders in order to get the job done without losing anybody. They're very complex missions, and there's a underlying plot that somebody has to uncover, and who do you trust with the secrets and who do you manipulate along the way. It might not sound like a great thing for fans of Voltron, but this is one of the best comics, not just of science fiction but of any genre, that I read of all 2012. I could not recommend anything more strongly than Voltron Year One. Okay, so that's my first element of the good. As far as the bad of 2012, as much as I'm a fan, I have to put the season that took place in 2012 of Doctor Who into the bad category. Now, there's, of course, going to be plenty of ups and downs of any TV series during a season, But the one thing that I think had the biggest impact on last season was basically described by two words: Amy Pond. And I know it's very simple to lay all the blame on her doorstep, but it really ties into the larger problem, and that is when a story starts becoming too heavy-handed with its overarching plot, as opposed to being able to do individual stories that maybe have a common thread to them, or a story, a big problem that builds up for the main characters to have to address by the end. It kind of get weighs down by that in, from at least my perspective. So the thing to do with Amy Pond and then Rory, being this warrior from the past that waited 1,000 years for her to find him, it's hard to keep track of all the different threads that come into it, and then River then being their child, and I'm sorry if I'm giving away spoilers here for anybody who hasn't seen any of these parts, but if you watch the show, you already know what I'm talking about. And then the part where has he been killed? Is he not dead? It got overly too complex. And normally I have no problem keeping up with complexity, but in this case it just bogged down the overall story, and it did not allow for flexibility that I look to for any good science fiction. So overall, I'm very glad that the Amy Pond, the Girl Who Waited era has come to an end, and that we're moving on to something new, because Doctor Who is one of the best science fiction shows out there, simply because it gets to renew itself every so often and go off and start things over almost from scratch. It doesn't have to get bogged down with its continuity and the big stories that came before it, because it can, the Doctor can regenerate, he can get new companions, and none of that old stuff has to be carried along with it. So that's why I keep watching, and I'm really looking forward to this next series of the premiere after the Christmas episode, which I did enjoy, by the way. Now for the ugly, Alphas. This is a show that I try to give as much of a shot as I could to. Ultimately, it really came down to, oh, hey, we're the X-Men, but oh, we're not really the X-Men, but no, we're just not going to say we're the X-Men, everybody knows we're the X-Men. You've got the leader of the group, the Professor X character, Dr. Rosen, and then everybody else fills in the various archetypes. One of my big complaints about this show, female characterization. The females are presented as extremely weak and incompetent, and they have, everybody on the show has problems, but their problems are detrimental to them being, actually functional members of the superhero part of the team. The other characters that kept me going on this, Gary and Bill, they were really the only reasons by the end that I kept watching it before I gave up completely. And again, this is one of those shows that became too bogged down in its own mythology. But it never seemed to get around to the point. It took how long for them to go public with the existence of Alphas, and then what did they do with it after that? Not much. It just basically reverted back to status quo, and then they go on to this other plot with the big bad guy, which, oh, hey, gay, gosh, that seems like it's the Magneto of their universe. Oh, well, but it's not really Magneto. And so if that sounds a little cynical from your perspective, so be it. But I think that Alphas falls within the ugly part of this last year, because it just fell apart from my perspective with all the potential that it had, the good characters that it had to work with, the way that they were performed and written. There was just a long way for it to go, and it was taking very small baby steps to get there. All right, back to the good. The Walking Dead, obviously, is a show that's been that sci-fi fans, comic fans, have been watching very closely, you know, not just to enjoy it, but to see how closely it resembles the comic book and to see how it develops, you know, whether it stays good, you know, gets worse, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this past season, just like every other season, you know, it's moved along relatively slowly, and that's been a big complaint among many of the viewers, particularly those who are fans of the comic book, who are used to the, you know, the plot moving along rather quickly and more going on than what they allowed to happen in the show. I mean, you spent basically a whole season at the farm and nothing, and hardly anything ever got done. You know, and everybody thought that by that time they'd be on to the governor and the prison by then. You know, but I think that one of the biggest problems when making a show like this that's based on a comic book is finding a balance between the way that the comic book has Rick Grimes as the center of the whole story, and where the show has to balance things out between the multiple characters, because you have two different audiences. You know, the comic book audience has become invested in Rick Grimes, and they've also come to expect that nobody else is safe. Where the TV audience, a lot of them don't know the comics, and they are invested in the entirety of the party. So to tell all of their stories and to make them all involved in what's going on in each episode, you know, it's just making things drag on a lot. And so that's where I think some of the complaints and dissatisfaction have come in. But I think they're doing a really good job of, you know, when you don't consider the comic books, of telling the story that they're trying to tell, and doing episodes on a week-by-week basis of where you know, these people are stuck in this new world and are dealing with it accordingly. It's very realistic from at least this viewer's perspective. Another one in the bad category would be Falling Skies. Just like Doctor Who, another show that I like a lot, that I had a lot of high hopes for this past season, but it just seemed to stumble a lot and not really get on with what was going on. It didn't keep challenging the reader with problems, with new, you know, plot elements. And you know, when I say no, I realize that there were new plot elements, there were challenges they threw our way, but it from my perspective, it just didn't seem to be enough. So, Falling Skies, you know, it kind of let me down this season, and I'm hoping with the cliffhanger that they gave us, more or less cliffhanger, just a tease for the coming season that's coming up this spring, that's going to stimulate some growth in the characters, in the overall story, and you know, get things back on track for some good science fiction there. This season, I just think that they recycled a lot of what they established in the first season. Then in the ugly category, I want to just make a little rant on Sci-Fi Channel and their Creature of the Week trend that's been going on. The movies that you get every Saturday that have some sort of, you know, mutant or monster shark involved, or giant hornets, or whatever it is, sharktopus, pythonicon, or something, you know, and there's nobody who has traditionally adored creature features more than me. You know, I mean, you may find people who are more vocal and passionate about it, but I've enjoyed monster flicks as much as anybody. Some of my favorite movies of all time are monster flicks. The Relic, Godzilla, and I could just go on and on. But the way that sci-fi has been more or less exploiting this genre, and kind of watering it down, I would say, has been a bit frustrating and I think disrespectful. And of course, you know, they got to make a buck, and there's a lot of people who like just the mindless fluff that these movies present. And I'm okay with mindless fluff, but to saturate and oversaturate the market with these Creature of the Week shows that are of such low quality, I really have a strong opinion about them that it's not good for the genre. You know, I would like to see maybe if instead of once a week, you know, once a month, and make them of much better quality. And all of the special effects that they use, the CGI, has been, you know, very lackluster and very cookie cutter. If they're going to put some money into a special effects budget, doing it once a month versus once a week, maybe they could get it out to become a little better. Or maybe think of some better ways of using special effects than just your cookie cutter CGI. You know, we haven't seen a lot of the traditional special effects in a long time. The things that in the 80s and 90s Tom Savini became legendary for, and you know, people like him. Speaking of sci-fi, back to the good category, the Sci-Fi Channel had its 20-year, not reunion, but 20-year anniversary episode just last month. And I didn't know what to expect on this. I certainly have not been watching sci-fi for 20 years because I haven't had cable that long. But when I did record it and I watched it, and it was actually extremely interesting. And normally I would be very apt to dismiss a anniversary show for anything because usually they're not really done that well. But this was done very well. I learned a lot about the history of the Sci-Fi Channel. And it's definitely presented upon its birth a lot of real science fiction, not just from reruns of old classic things like Twilight Zone, but of the breakthrough original programming that it presented. And they had a lot of science fiction, you know, real stories to them, like those shows like Twilight Zone and Tales from the Dark Side and Amazing Stories used to present. The variety and ingenuity of them, you know, was just really enjoyable. Like your stories by Robert Heinlein and Ray Bradbury, used to see those. And again, they would focus on the humanity, not necessarily the special effects of everything, which I feel is the best of sci-fi. I also learned about some shows that I really never paid any attention to, like Farscape. And I know a lot of you just had to catch your breath there when, you know, I'm hosting a sci-fi show and I've never seen Farscape, but that just wasn't something that was on my radar when it was on. But when they described the show in all of its development from in great detail, particularly the cast and the crew elements and how it was brought back for some movies because of the incredible demand by the fans. Now, I was very impressed with it, and obviously it's something that I can give some respect to in the sci-fi genre based on what I learned that day. But also it gave me some additional appreciation for one of my favorites, and that's the Stargate SG-1 show. And that's because later seasons they introduced some different characters, which were the actors who were the two leads from Farscape. And at the time, I had no idea why anybody was making a big deal out of these two actors that came aboard. But, you know, being that they were the two love interests from Farscape, now it makes a lot more sense. So all these fans of Farscape now got to see these two reunited again, although in, you know, as different people and with a different dynamic between them on Stargate SG-1. So it gave me a little additional appreciation for it. Anyway, all right, another item in the bad column, Terra Nova. Now, I wanted to like Terra Nova, and I did really enjoy it a lot, not just because of the special effects, but because I really liked the science fiction ideas behind it. The the futuristic society where people could only have so many children, and or else it was, you know, prison for the parents, and et cetera, about that. That's got its whole, it's got a whole bag of sci-fi elements in it by itself. But then you send them all to the past, and you know, you've got unlimited canvas, so to speak, of different elements you can throw into it, because you've got futuristic technology being thrust into prehistoric times, and then you've got warring factions and the human element is very predominant throughout the show. I thought that it was a win-win on that, but obviously there were writing problems, and you know, people were dissatisfied, and the ratings dropped, and it got canceled, which I didn't find out about until months after the season finale. So I was caught kind of, you know, flat-footed on that, and very disappointed to hear that it got canceled. Okay, back in the ugly category, I'm going to have to throw one in here that I really don't want to, and that is Grimm. Grimm is one of my favorite shows on TV. It's actually one of my three favorite shows on television, period, of any genre. This past season, it acquired a lot of, you know, additional components to it. Nick's mother came back for a little while. Juliet, you know, she completely lost her memory of Nick. And you had the big bad, you know, organization of the nobles bearing down on Seattle to get the Grimm to give up his secret key thing, which would help them find some magic, you know, historical weapon or something. I forget the exact details. A lot of things that bogged down the overall, you know, story and too much for the average watcher, the casual watcher, to have to deal with, and you know, to just turn on the show without being a committed viewer. And so basically a lot of the same problems as Doctor Who, but still able to, you know, to have a lot to enjoy about it, such as the characters, you know, Monroe and the captain, you know, who are just fantastic characters. I just can't get enough of them. So there was enough good about it to kind of balance out the negatives, which is why it's in the ugly category. It would take a lot for me to throw Grimm into the bad column. So I'm definitely looking forward to the next season of that. It's still one of my top three favorite shows, and I'm sorry it's got to be in the ugly category for right now. Going on to movies, in the good category, and this should be no surprise to anybody who knows me or is familiar with Smash Tales, am putting Avengers right up there in good sci-fi for 2012. Now, comic book characters, superheroes, you might want to put that in its own category, not science fiction. But, sorry, can't help myself. This is something that is a win-win-win-win in every category that I can basically name. The acting was great. I thought the writing, the special effects, the cinematography, the costumes, everything about this movie, I thought totally wonderful. A+, enough said. So rather than just rant about and gush about how much I loved Avengers, let's move on to something which I did not care for in the long run, and that would happen to be Prometheus. Now, Prometheus was supposed to be, from everybody going to it, but completely denied by the creator, Ridley Scott. It was either supposed to be or not supposed to be, you know, the prequel to Aliens. And so, you know, everyone went in with their expectations, and we all wanted to really enjoy it and go along for the ride, and it was a real exciting ride. A lot of action, a lot of great special effects, but it was so bogged down in trying to make, you know, connect all the dots between Alien and its past that it made it it took away all the freshness and the originality and the potential that you would have in a big science fiction idea filled movie. The characters, they were also pretty flat. You didn't really end up caring about any of them. I wasn't at all upset when some characters ended up going under the dirt, so to speak, for one reason or another, particularly at the big climax. And I'm going to be a little vague about that just for people who haven't seen it. But when you got certain characters that, for all intents and purposes, are the good guys in this particular story, and you don't really care when they go bye-bye, you got something wrong. Charlize Theron, she was flat, nothing, not a good bad guy, not a good guy, and it just kept going and going on and on. The only one you end up do caring about is the android in it, and he's got a commanding performance. He's the only one who really takes over every scene that he's in, played by Michael Fassbender, who I think is one of the greatest actors of our time, of this particular group of actors in this generation. He was Magneto in the X-Men First Class movie, for those of you who haven't seen Prometheus. Then you would know who I'm talking about. In the ugly category, Cloud Atlas. Now, another film that I did enjoy when I watched it, but it's, again, so bogged down with details and it does so much jumping around that it can really be a hot mess. Now, personally, I have no problem in following a complicated movie, something that has a lot of science fiction elements in it and even, time travel elements to it. It really doesn't give me much of a problem, but the reason why I'm pointing out that as a problem is because there's a lot of people who aren't able to follow that kind of stuff, and if it's just too complex and too bogged down in the all the details and overarching mythology that it's trying to build for you, then to make it a movie, even a 3-hour movie, which I think it was close to, is going to be a challenge. The performances, don't get me wrong, top notch. The visuals and cinematography, fantastic. Halle Berry, Tom Hanks, and some of the others, really, really good. So that's why it's in the ugly category. Had a lot of good things going on, but the too many details just kind of made it a hot mess. Okay, one thing, let's mix it up a little bit. Instead of switching back to good, let's flip back to bad for a little bit. And this is going to hurt me as much as it hurts you guys. Firefly, Brown Coats United. This was a reunion episode 10 years after the show Firefly was canceled and went off the air, and it featured some, not all, but some of the stars of the show and a couple of the writers who came along and sat around a table and basically talked about Firefly for a while, and you got to see clips from the show, and that's basically it. It's more or less became the Mal Reynolds and Joss Whedon memorial tour reunion. So, and the reason why I say that is because everybody that I know is a fan of Nathan Fillion, and Joss Whedon gathers a lot of fandom too. These guys are basically the next thing to deities in the world of sci-fi for many fans. And the show really did not deviate from that at all. You got to see a bunch of the other people too, but it was really all about them and their egos and their experiences. And it was also just kind of boring. There was nothing fresh about it. You got to see some the actors going on and on about how much they love the fans and how much the fandom has kept the show alive and all that. And yeah, it's ripping our hearts out once again to have to be exposed to how wonderful Firefly was and how awful it was when it was canceled and how it ripped the hearts out of us all back then, and it's just doing it all over again when it's presented to us this time. That's not going to change. I don't think you can get around that, no matter how they organized this particular reunion episode. But it was basically just a bunch of actors and a couple writers around a table, reminiscing and talking about, Comic-Con and stuff. There was not a lot there worth my hour of time. I can watch the show and I'll reminisce just as good. So it's with a heavy heart that while I love Firefly, the Firefly Browncoats Unite gets a big ol' thumbs down from me. All right, let's end on a positive note. So let's go back to Ugly, because we got one more after this. As far as films go into 2012, I'm going to put Looper in the Ugly category. And there's a lot good to be said about Looper, and I'll reiterate, everything in my Ugly category is not all bad, and that's why it's the Ugly category, because for all the good, there's things that are going to there's things that are going to take me out of it and make me say, not as good as it could have been. One I think is pretty obvious, and that's the special effects in this. While I was perfectly fine with them not having a spheroid dimensional warp like when the Terminator came to our time, any other type of special effect as a character goes from the future into the past, they just kind of appear there, that's fine, that's not a big deal. But when they go and use all their special effects budget to kind of morph Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face to look like Bruce Willis, I'm really taken out of the movie there. I'm looking at, oh wow, he looks a lot like Bruce Willis, instead of paying attention to the lines and the plot. And you eventually do get used to it somewhat, but one thing that I never get used to is, and this is going to sound really petty, and it's just the geek in me that cannot get around it. There were flaws to the time travel portion, and now I'd like to go into detail on the flaws to it, but every time travel movie does what makes sense in terms of the plot and fits what the creators want, how they want to write it, how they want to tell the story. They're never made to be exactly how real time travel would function. You can apply that to any time travel movie, from The Time Machine to Time Cop to Butterfly Effect, to Looper. So it really doesn't matter what the problems are that a movie or a TV show has, where their time travel theory is going to be different from what things would be if time travel was a real thing. But this one did deviate. But anyway, that's the geek in me. That's not a movie flaw. That's just a very arbitrary complaint that I have with time travel movies for the most part. You're never going to see the perfect time travel film, because time travel doesn't exist, and you can't make a good movie when you're worried about being bogged down by what would happen if time travel were real. All right, so let's end things off with the good, and that would be a movie that almost never came out. It seemed like forever. They were talking about it for a while. Cabin in the Woods. And that's starred Chris Hemsworth, as well as a bunch of people who aren't big names in Hollywood these days. But it could easily fall within the horror genre, but it took a few twists through it that really gave it a science fiction flavor that I enjoyed a lot. I saw the original trailers and it looked like just a conventional horror movie. I had really no interest in it. Slasher films as horror movies don't really do it for me. But the more I learned about this movie, the more excited I got about going to see it, because it turns from a horror movie to one where the people who are being victimized are involved in a larger plot, where they just happen to be the pawns in a big thing that has to do with the fate of the earth and so on. I don't want to get too much into it in case anybody hasn't seen it. You know, I don't want to spoil things, but the way that things turn out by the end, and all of the nods and respect that they show to different sci-fi and horror movies and shows, I thought was just phenomenal. It was handled tastefully. It wasn't bogged down with a lot of super complex details. It was a very simple idea that unraveled itself through the course of the movie, like the layers of a very easy to understand onion. And I could not recommend this movie more. It was very fun, and I would definitely like to watch that movie again. Oh, one thing that I did forget to go into, and this falls in the ugly category, Dark Knight Rises. Sorry. I know a lot of my comics friends are like, what? No way. And so Dark Knight Rises, ugly category because, A, yes, it was a masterpiece of filmmaking. Yes, Nolan is a genius. Yes, everybody loves to make fun of how Bruce Wayne's voice or Batman's voice sounds in this. But, there was obviously a lot good about this movie. Total masterpiece. But just like The Dark Knight, it's not a movie that I ever want to watch again. You know, it's so gloomy. It's so, I don't want to say dark, because there's a lot of dark movies that I could watch over and over again and enjoy. But there's so much doom and gloom about it, from what happens with the characters to the overall major threat to the city, and what the bad guy pulls out, Bane, and what he does to Gotham, and the big threat to all the residents of Gotham that everybody, all the good guys have to try to circumvent. It's just all so depressing and sad, and by the end, you don't even know who's the good guy anymore, from my perspective. And there's no kind of there's no upside. Sure, the bad guys get defeated and everything kind of returns somewhat to normal, but you don't really feel good about it. It was a very pyrrhic victory. You lost more than what was gained. What was the victory cost too much. And I just walked away with it with a lot of sadness and a bad taste in my mouth. Although I feel that the movie itself was a total masterpiece, as was the entire trilogy. It was all told expertly well. It's just not a story that I want to revisit ever again. So I promised to go things out on a good note, but it looks like I lied, so sorry about that. I just realized that I had forgotten to cover one that was on my list. And I know that there's going to be a lot of stuff that I missed that you guys are going to be upset about. Hey, why aren't you talking about Fringe? Hey, what about Once Upon a Time? I guarantee you that whatever your complaint is, that Derek, he's right on it, and he's going to have it covered in the next episode of Sci-Fi Noise. So I promised all you fans of Smash Tales that I'm on a new episode of that. I've had a script waiting for months, but to be honest, perfectly honest, the building that me and the Colonel used to record our episodes in is being demolished, so we have to find an opportunity to record in a relative privacy, And doing that has proven to be a challenge. So as soon as we get a nice recording session and a pseudo studio to replace the old one, we're going to be right on that, and we got things ready to rock and roll for that. And let's have a great year of science fiction in comics, in movies, in TV, and I hope that everybody has at least gotten a little bit of giggles from listening to my rant and raves about, you know, things that really I don't know as much as Derek about. So send your letters attention to Derek Coward and complain about how you never want me to come and co-host this again. And you guys have a great science fiction 2013. Peace out. Fairly well.
I'm going to see.